Welcome to the Rethink ELA podcast, hosted by English language arts teacher Michelle Waters. Prepare to receive strategies, products, and expert advice tailored to help teachers build social awareness, student agency, and voice in their ELA classrooms.
Hey there. I am interviewing high school teacher Aaron Blackwelder from Washington State about his journey to ditching grades in his English classes. Before we jump into the interview, though, I'd like to share some of my going gradeless story, which led me to find Aaron. I started out as a traditional teacher, particularly with grades. And in the first couple of years of my journey, I started to realize that this wasn't working. The A kids, you know, those kids that always get an A, they have straight A's on their report card. Some of them were demanding every point. They earned a 99 on an assignment and then wanted to know what they could do in order to get that other point. Or maybe I handed back a progress report and they had a 99 on it and wanted to know what they could do to get a 100. And then you had the other A kids who pretty much thought they knew everything. They were happy whether they had a 90 or a 99. They were good with that. They thought that there was nothing more that they could do to succeed or to grow. So they were just done. Then you have the B and C kids who calculate every grade to see if it's worth the effort. Okay, I have a B in this class and I've made an 80 on this assignment. That's only going to bring me down from an 86 to an 85. So you know what? I'm good. I don't need to do anything else. I'm done. Then you have kids who have D's or F's. And they've given up. They've just accepted that label. Here's what's true in all those scenarios. Those kids aren't worried about what they're learning. They're worried about subjective numbers, letters, and labels. And that's not what I want for them as a teacher. While my main concern is about the students and what they're learning, I as a professional feel that I need to be able to justify the feedback or the grade that I'm giving students. It was hard to justify my point system, and you know, it really still is. So I started asking teachers, you know, what do you do? How do you grade? And every single teacher I talked to had a different system and a different rationale behind their system. You know, some of them were very traditional. They all made sense at one level, but I never could figure out something consistent that communicated my students' progress effectively. Again, I talked to different teachers, and there were some who had a rationale that maybe stood out above the rest. For example, one teacher told me that he only gives 10 points per assignment because he didn't want his students to have to earn thousands of points. But I kept thinking, well, what does that matter? You have 36 weeks of school and you need 2 grades per week. What's the difference between 7,200 points and 720 besides that last zero? In either case, we're still talking about grades and not learning. So I started trying different solutions like standard-based grading, trying to figure out how to implement that in my own classroom within the context of a traditional grading system, assignment revisions, feedback and action statements. And I feel like I have been successful at this point in my journey with the feedback and action statements and asking students to do revisions and focusing on those aspects of an assignment. I still feel like I'm struggling with the grading system that I have being in a traditional school. So I'm 2 years into this journey and I'm still trying to figure it out. This is important because by de-emphasizing the grades and helping students improve, I'm able to see the kids. I'm able to see where they're at in their learning. I'm able to see if they are moving towards mastery. I'm able to see if they are making progress or if maybe they've shut down. Whatever's going on in their head, I'm able to figure that out. I've been able to discover writers, which I talk about in Growing Invisible Voices, which you can find at invisibleyoungvoices.com. But I'm still new to this journey. So using Twitter and Google, I searched for an English teacher who was further along in this project. I was looking to find somebody who can help me with the logistics of figuring out how can I create a more meaningful feedback system for my students, even though I'm still working in the context of a traditional grading system. And that's how I discovered Aaron Blackwelder and Teachers Going Gradeless. So when we return, we will find out what we can do to get rid of those grades and actually start focusing on learning.
When it comes to reaching students through literature, finding reliable resources is challenging. Your search is over. Rethink ELA Podcast is here to provide student-tested, research-based strategies, products, and advice. Here's your host, Michelle Waters.
Welcome back to RethinkELA.com. I'm Michelle Waters, and I'm here today with Aaron Blackwelder. He's the author of Mr. Blackwelder teachersgoinggradeless.wordpress.com, and also is co-founder of teachersgoinggradeless.com. I'm sure glad to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me. This is a pleasure.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. Well, I have a few questions for you about going gradeless in the English language arts classroom, particularly at the secondary level. This is something that I personally have been working on doing in my classes, and I keep getting hung up in the logistics. So maybe you might have a few answers, maybe I might have a few answers, but we'll figure this out at least a little bit.
Yeah, we'll try. I mean, it's a sticky situation, and whenever we're reporting and whenever we're required to report, it's always hard. So it's even hard on my end.
Absolutely. So schools have been giving grades out for 100 years. Some of us might wonder, why is this a problem?
Okay, so the problem is that grades are just, they fail to communicate anything. They've never really communicated anything. They've been an attempt to shortcut communicating learning. And from what I've seen over my studies and my experience as an educator, is they're really a lazy way to communicate learning. Teachers seem to want the quick fix, quick, easy answer for assessing kids and reporting where kids are in their learning goals. And simply putting a grade on something is just a shortcut and an avoidance of answering that question to the kid, how am I doing? What am I learning? And am I achieving the goals set out in this class? I think that they... you can't communicate those things in a single letter grade or a number. And besides that, they're not only a failure to communicate, but they're demoralizing. It's been said that the first thing a kid does when he gets his test or essay or whatever back is he looks at the grade. And then the second thing he looks at is the grade of his neighbor. It invokes competition, and it just demoralizes and detracts from learning. It makes it about a point accumulation or appeasing other people or making other people look at you like you're better than others. I haven't found any positive support for a reason to give a kid a grade. And it's just, since I've eliminated grades, we still get into conversations where kids want to ask, what is my grade going to be? But those conversations are fewer and fewer. And the conversation that I'm having now about learning and ideas is deeper and deeper. And I feel that grades are just the shortcut to report, and it just ruins the whole educational process.
Absolutely. Grades just label kids in reality. You have those kids who see themselves as an A kid, and some of them are just hyper-focused on getting those points, and then others are thinking, hey, I have an A. What else do I need to learn? I'm at the top. I have nowhere else to go.
Exactly. And you have those kids that say, what do I have to do just to pass the class? What do I have to do just to get the C? And it always becomes a grade focus rather than a learning focus. And you can't be both. You can either be grade focused or you can be learning focused.
Absolutely. So what happened in your teaching or in your classroom that caused you to rethink that grading system?
Well, several years ago, I'd say probably pushing around 10 years ago, I started wondering, what is it that I'm doing in my class? I knew for a fact that everything I was doing was meaningless. Giving kids worksheets, putting points on the worksheets, I knew kids were copying from each other, attempting to have kids write formulaically, trying to assign points to something that just really I felt couldn't be measured. And from there, I brought my concern to my department, and we thought about this. We're like, what is it that we are doing that is really, truly benefiting each and every single one of our kids? And from there, we went from we went from traditional grading to more of a mastery-based, where kids had to do certain things that we felt were essential. They had to be able to give a presentation, they had to be able to write an essay, and they had to be able to analyze text. And from there, it just we tried going to the 4-point rubric with that. And from there, it just we kept nitpicking it, and we found, well, even with a 4-point rubric, we still had those conversations with student work with, well, why am I not getting the 4, and why am I getting a 3? And I had to defend, and I didn't want to defend. I wanted to teach. I wanted to inspire. I wanted kids to, you know, to have a conversation with them about what they were doing, and not make it a final assessment of, right, well, this essay has a 4 in this, a 2 in this, a 3 in that, so it averages out to be a 3. Well, you know, it didn't make sense to me. It just made absolutely no sense after a while. And then I started researching more and more and found you could eliminate grades, and you could have conversations just about the text or just about the student's work. And I've found that it's liberating. It's absolutely liberating. It's a lot of work. It's a lot more work than I've ever done before, but it's seriously a work of passion, because I know I'm building relationships with kids, and I know I'm meeting their needs.
Yes, and that's some of the feedback that I've gotten from my students as I've tried to go through this process. I'm much newer at this than you are. I've only started trying to do this the last couple of years or so. Some of the response I've gotten from my students is, you know, you've really helped me by giving me feedback on my essays. Instead of just putting a grade on it, you tell me what I need to do to make it better.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what they need. That's what they want.
Yeah, and at times we let them do it, or we just expect them to. We say, no, you need to do this. This is, you know, I know in the past you've been told you get a C for this because you forgot to do this, this, and this, and this. Well, right. That's not what writing is. Writing needs to communicate clear ideas. And I'm sorry, your work doesn't communicate those clear ideas. So no C.
Yes, and when you have those conversations with students, and especially if you have a revision policy in your class like I do, it's part of the way that you teach your kids that you care about them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've had a student that I've returned paper to in one particular situation, and he had earned a C on that paper, and I had written some action statements saying, you know, this is what you need to do in order to make this better. And he said, well, what grade do I have in this class? And I don't even remember what it was, but he said, oh, well, will this paper hurt me? And I thought, oh, I know exactly where you're going.
Yeah.
And I told him, you need to redo this. And he said, well, if this grade isn't going to hurt my overall grade, then I don't see why I should do it. And I said, because you can do better than this. You are going to do better than this. I will call you in at lunch and make you do better than this. And another kid sitting next to him just laughed and said, she won't even let you fail in this class.
Exactly.
And that just meant a lot to at least the other kid. Maybe not so much the kid that I was making redo his paper, but although he did do it, so.
Well, yeah. And another thing that stood out to me when we, over the years of having conversations with my department, one of our teachers was very frustrated with the fact that she flat out said, kids don't revise.
Yep.
I try to push revision. Kids don't revise. And that clicked in my head. Mm-hmm. It haunted me for a long time. And I said, and my response to it was, well, if kids don't revise, then what are we doing to teach them that and expect that? And if we're not doing it in the classroom and we have these hard due dates that are inflexible, then revision is not part of the process and we should be forcing it. And so that's been part of eliminating due dates with me as well.
I am glad to hear that, because being a former newspaper reporter, we had due dates, we had deadlines. Of course, they weren't as hard and fast as you would think they would be either. There are times when, you know, something happens and you still have 2 or 3 phone calls to make, or the deadline's at midnight and the vice president of a bank gets run over by a tractor and you have to go out and cover that story and get it in.
Right.
So, you know, deadlines aren't as hard and fast as people think they are. And if you don't believe me, just check with the state and highway projects. Those aren't hard and fast either.
Exactly.
And like you said about revision and making kids understand the importance of that, I started doing that just by telling kids that they can revise anything. If they have a 99 and they want 100, they could revise that for a higher grade. Or that's where I started, because that's where the kids were at the time.
Right.
And then if they had anything less than a C, or a C or less, I made them revise. Told them, you're going to do this because I know you can do better. And then since then, I've just been trying to work out not having that grade conversation.
Yeah.
Going back to your journey, though, you mentioned that you had kind of done some research. What experts did you turn to inform your journey?
One of the first things that I read that really struck me was Alfie Cohen's From Degrading to Degrading. That just blew my mind. And it spoke about the problems with gradings and the detriment, the destructive nature of gradings and the demoralizing behavior of grading. And after that, I was hungry for it. From there, I read Mark Barnes and Assessment 3.0 and Role Reversal. And a couple of years ago, I read Star Saxstein's Hacking Assessment. And so, yeah, it just was a process of reading a lot of those authors. And they helped open my eyes. Also, a huge influence for me, I know he's more standards-based, is Rick Wormelli. I really enjoyed his work as well.
So tell me about your school's grading environment. Do you have to enter grades, or are you a standards-based grading school or something else?
So we're a traditional grade school. I have to report a letter grade at the end of the semester. I wish I didn't. My principal is very progressive and very supportive. When I asked him, and at this point, I've got the approval to not give a grade until the end of the semester. I don't have to do anything on progress reports. I don't have to do anything on report cards. Or sorry, semester report or quarter report cards. I do have to report where the kids are. I have to communicate that with the parents. And he said, if you're going to not give a grade, then you need to figure out ways to communicate where your students are with their parents. Yes. And I said, absolutely, I will work on that. And so what I've done over the last few years is in my classroom, I've just slowly changed the way that I've done it. At first, it was self-reporting at those periods. I had kids self-report. And it had the caveat of, where do you think you will be at the end of the semester, not where are you now? And because part of the problem is, if we're doing a good job teaching, we set up our learning objectives. And our students should not be able to do those learning objectives at the beginning of the semester. They should be failing them all. And if we are good teachers and we're setting up high standards in our class, then at progress report and at midterm report card, they should be getting grades that parents won't want to see. We should be giving out a lot of F's and D's and C's. And I personally did not want to explain that to the parent of the kid that's always been the 4-point student. And when I presented my principal that, and I said, hey, this is a problem, he goes, you're absolutely right. So what I've done over the last couple of years, it's been evolving and changing, is at first it was self-reporting grades with the caveat of, where do you think you'll be? And since then, I have been able to eliminate a letter grade, a quarter, and either put P or F. And the P is, yes, they're making adequate progress. And then I put a ton of comments in there of what the child has done successfully, what they still need to revise, or what they have not done, or what they haven't attempted yet. And it's been a big list, and it takes a long time to fill it out. But like I said, a letter grade is a lazy, easy way to get around that.
Right.
So, yeah. And then now where I'm at is I want kids to communicate. Yes. And so I have kids fill out a Google form that then converts into a Word document that's emailed to parents. And I send those out at progress report times. And within that, students can embed their work. so not only are parents seeing where the child is with our learning targets, but the parent is also seeing the child's work that they've been doing over the period of time. And I find that to be a much better progress report.
Yes. Okay. So you mentioned, and I don't know if this is still part of the system that you're using or if this was just part of the journey, but you mentioned that the P standard for progress and there was an F as well.
Yeah, it's because of the system that we have. I have to give some form of grade, and we already had it in our system for pass or fail.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. And
okay.
I hate communicating the fail because I don't feel that's where kids are, but I do want it to be, I do want parents to be aware that, hey, you know, we've written two essays right now and your child hasn't turned either of them in.
Right.
You know, we need to have this taken care of.
Of course, whether or not that child has turned it in could be, the difference could be the child has not done it at all and is just completely checked out, or maybe the child's at home or in class working and revising it over and over and over again.
Exactly. And I don't know where it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask you very quickly, this is kind of not really off topic, but relevant. What grade level are you teaching at?
Oh, I teach high school. I have taught freshmen for the last 12 years and mostly seniors. This year I have a junior class that I'm teaching, but mostly freshmen and seniors.
Okay. I teach 9th, 10th, and 11th grades and have for the past 3 years. So do you think that this kind of system would work at the middle school level?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know several middle school ELA teachers that do a no grade system. And in all honesty, you know, I know that currently grades are a currency, or they're treated like a currency. So kids can buy things like participation in athletics and cheaper car insurance. And maybe sometimes it's college entrance. And most of the time it's keep their parents off their back or to give their parents something to brag about. That's usually what that currency buys. But at the middle school level, I don't believe there should even be grades, period. I don't think that, at the high school, I don't like it, but I understand it's kind of a necessity.
Right.
But at the middle school, I just don't think that it should be there at all. Why are we training them and making them think in those terms?
Exactly. And you have kids that are just kind of trying to figure out who they are and coming into that journey of being a teenager, and they're being labeled A, B, C,
right,
D, or F, and that just is not what they need right now or right then.
No.
So we've talked about what being gradeless looks like at the end of the term for you, but what does it look like on a day-to-day basis in your class?
I don't think it looks different than any other class. I feel that you know, kids are learning, kids are reading, kids are writing, some kids are playing on their phones, some kids are, you know, having their side conversations. I don't think it looks any different than most others. What we do differently, the only thing I guess we do differently is we do a lot of conferencing. I'm popping in with kids, talking with them. I do have a conferencing area in my room where I call kids up and pull them in. But it's a lot of one-on-one conversations or even large group discussions. And where I'm trying to go is I'm desperately trying to incorporate more peer-to-peer discussions around their work and challenging them to give good, positive peer feedback. But I think that if anybody walked into my classroom on any given day, it probably wouldn't look much different than a regular class, I don't think.
Okay. So what responses have you received from the students, parents, administrators, other teachers, and what has been your response to them?
At first, they thought I was crazy. They thought, how can you inspire kids to do work if they're not going to be given a grade? And I even asked that question myself, too. That was the initial response. Now that I've been doing this, just because this is my third year, not actually giving a grade, my principal is full on supportive of it, and he's encouraging other teachers to go that route. Other teachers are asking me questions on how do I do this. Parents, they love it. They absolutely support what I'm doing. I do get some questions from parents like, you know, kids applying for auto insurance and they need to have some form of grade, and I can work with that. But for the most part, they love it. The kids, they get it. Some of them, especially the high flyers, really want that grade.
Right.
But for the most part, the kids completely understand it, for at least from the conversation that I've had with my students. I haven't had any major pushback yet, but I assume that at some point I probably will.
Right. So are you taking any steps now to try to head that off or try to address any potential pushback before it arrives?
Yeah, we our department is the first department to go completely gradeless in our school. And we have made the decision to have a parent night at the beginning of the school year where we invite all of our freshman parents out to communicate what they're going to see, what they're not going to see, and how we're going to communicate, attempt to communicate learning throughout the semester, which will be through several emails and mostly from the students. And the parents seem to really latch onto that and enjoy that too.
Excellent. So what advice would you give to other teachers who are wanting to make this change or who have just gotten on to the highway to make this journey?
Well, the first thing I would suggest is don't do it alone. I was fortunate enough to have a department that was really interested in focusing on student learning. A lot of teachers out there will have to do it solo in their school.
Yes.
And because other teachers are going to think that they're crazy, and how do we get kids to do work if we don't put a grade and threaten them with that?
Right.
But I would say, yeah, find some support groups. Twitter has been a fantastic resource for me to connect with other teachers and find out what they're doing. There are Facebook groups. We have our Teachers Going Gradeless Facebook group, and there's some great conversations going on there. Lots of great questions. Teachers who are just starting out their journey, and we have teachers who have been doing it for a long time. We have college professors. We have kindergarten teachers. We have the whole spectrum of teachers in that Facebook group who are very eager to answer and help support others. But yeah, I would say don't do it alone. Find support. Build a professional learning network that will be there for you to help answer questions, guide you. But the other thing is, you don't have to do it all at one time. Do what you're comfortable with. Eliminate grading for one project and take it step by step. See what you can replace it with and see how just conversations can really help build students' learning. So yeah, I would say take the baby steps.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time and your expertise.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate you being here for Rethink ELA podcast.
It was my pleasure this morning, Michelle.
Thank you.
Encourage your high school students to share their stories, discuss building a representative society, and develop their writing skills. With this set of 15 highly engaging lesson plans, you can mix and match to meet your students' needs. Download this unit at rethinkela.com/sjwp.